Hello, good evening, and welcome to this new Midlife Women radio show introduced by Jean MacDonald. Today, our special guest is Susan Lee, who is a stress and anxiety counsellor and also a very well-known author and broadcaster. So, hello, Susan.
Hello, Jean.
Nice to have you on the show. Can we just run through the titles of your books, because you've done so many and I lose track. What's the latest one you've done?
My most recent one that came out just before Christmas is called 101 Days of Inspiration, hashtag tip of the day. And that came about because I had a Twitter, not campaign, but I had a time on Twitter where I was putting out a tip of the day. And it's only 140 characters on Twitter, and it got so popular that these little aphorisms were attracting quite a lot of interest. So I thought, well, I'll put them all together in a book. So I did. I made some of them a bit longer, bought a lot of photographs, and turned it into a gorgeous little handbook that sold really well, particularly before Christmas, because it £8, £7.99, it was something that people were quite happy to buy as an extra present, or something for their staff, or something for their girlfriends, or whatever it might be. So that was my first book, and that's been around a few months now.
Very good.
My first book came about in 2012, when I got a phone call from a man in South Africa who said, "Can I have 86 copies of your book, please, for the libraries in Botswana?" And it's called Dealing with Death, Coping with the Pain. And I said, "That's not a book, that's just one article that I've written on the web." And he said, "Well, I want 86 copies of your book." So fortunately, I knew a publisher. So I pulled up the drawbridge and drew the curtains and sort of locked myself away and sent him off three chapters for his approval. But I actually wrote the book as a consequence of that being that phone call. And it's been reprinted this last year. And that sold very well. And that's still that's probably one of my best-selling books, actually. So it's done really, really well, because I didn't just limit it to death. Even though it's called Dealing with Death, I'm very aware that for a lot of people, endings, whether it be redundancy, an end of a relationship, health-related issues, a change of life, we can grieve and have to make significant adjustments as a consequence of that. So I didn't just limit it to dealing with death per se, the whole thing about grieving, the whole range of emotions we can go through as a consequence, coping with and supporting a friend or an ally or a colleague, all those, the anniversaries, being newly single, all that is covered in that first book. And then my third book, which is Dealing with Stress, Managing Its Impact, that's actually my book. That's the book that is about everything that I do. So that's gone on loads of recommended reading lists, and quite a lot of business owners have taken it from their libraries, you know, because it covers stress at work, at home, in relationships, looking after yourself. It's 75,000 words, but it's all written in short little sections, short little paragraphs. And I always say to people, look at the contents rather than read it from A to Z. You know, look at the contents, find the part that is relevant for you, whatever that might be, and that's the place to go. And it's all short paragraphs, very, very easy to read. So that was my second book.
Wonderful. So that's the one that you're holding there in the picture?
That's the one I'm holding. No, that's my third book, actually. That's 101 Days of Inspiration.
Right.
A little cutie pie. That's a lovely little book. And with the artist who actually did the cover for that, he's done me another two covers, so I've got another two books waiting in the wings. One will be on 101 Nights of Sleep, and the other one in that little range will be about relationships. So, but that is my latest book, that one. That's it. That's gorgeous. I love that little book. It's pictures, and it's cute, and it just is. There's actually 106 tips in there, but it's one of those where you open it, just read the one for today, and you can have something to think about, to be boosted by. They all got a very positive uplift with them.
That's wonderful. It reminds me that the phrase handbook means a book you should keep to hand so you could just dip into it rather than a reading from cover to cover. And that's so true of this book and its purpose. And the other two books that you've mentioned that you're doing is to have them by you. So you just grab them and almost, as you say, open them, flick through. Sometimes just randomly open the book, I find, and you find the thing that helps just apparently by chance.
Well, yes, because that third book is blokes have bought that book. I mean, I thought initially it might be a little bit girly, but I've had quite a few men I know who bought that book, and that's just a sort of like a short boost, a bit like you might read at the bottom of a calendar or in a diary or something, where it just gives you aphorisms. It just gives you a bit of a thought. The other two are more like, not textbooks, the more self-help books. This is more just a uplift book.
Something yes.
in your bag or your pocket, and it is a dip in, open it when you're thinking or in need of a bit of a boost, and that's what this book is. But the other two are more about handbooks to help you in a situation where you look at the section, the relevant section, and get a lift as a consequence of that.
Yes, brilliant. Okay, so we can say that all these books are available on Amazon.
Yeah, they're in Waterstones Bookshop, but they might need to be ordered. They're on Amazon. You can also have a look on my website, lifestyletherapy.net. They're available on there, but any which way is fine because they're all available to you know, they're accessible enough to get.
So there you are. Just look up the famous author, Susan Lee, L-E-I-G-H, and you're on Amazon, and you'll find her, or you go to Waterstones. Let's move on to the topic which we wanted to talk about today, which is stress and anxiety. Well, you mentioned that, of course, that one of your books relates to that. And can I ask you how, firstly, what a stress and anxiety counsellor does?
Okay, well, people often come to me, they actually rarely come saying, I'm coming to you because I'm stressed and anxious, though they may, but in the main, people often come because there's an impact on their life. So they come because they've got issues, they've got concerns, they're unhappy about their behaviour, they feel they're repeating negative patterns, they're distressed or, you know, needing de-stressing as a consequence of that. So they will often come because they have what I call symptoms, and there are actually over 360 physical symptoms of stress.
Really? Gosh.
Absolutely. And I kind of half laugh and say, you know, you can have a brand new one for every day of the year if you're really so minded.
Oh, yes.
But in fact, all these different things that we may end up going to see our doctor about because we've got miscellaneous aches and pains, we've got palpitations, we've got headaches that keep on occurring, blurred vision, we've lost our libido, we're struggling with a dry mouth, we're shaky, we've got jelly legs, all these sorts of things. We've got IBS type symptoms, irritable bowel syndrome type symptoms, and all these different things impact on our health and well-being, and we may well ignore them for a time because we're stoic and we get on with things and oh, it'll pass and it's a phase, and it may well be, but often these things can attract other symptoms, if you like, and so we can end up if we ignore them if we don't take any account of what's actually happening with ourselves. We ignore those sort of amber lights that are flashing saying, this is a warning, honey, pay attention. Then often I find that other areas in our lives will be impacted, and then people will start to come and to see people like myself because they're struggling. Their relationships are struggling, their concentration at work's struggling, they're feeling perhaps vaguely unwell a lot of the time, and all these things can come together. And then And it's interesting because I know when we started the practice over 20 years ago, people would first go to the doctors and maybe get repeat prescriptions over periods of time. I mean, we used to have, way back in the day, people coming who'd been on repeat prescriptions for something like 20 years. That doesn't happen the same way anymore. What we find nowadays here is that people are more aware of the importance of spending money, investing in themselves, taking time to actually look after themselves a bit better and take responsibility. So I know that years ago, I'd say I'm a hypnotherapist. People would take three steps back and be quite daunted at the prospect of meeting somebody like me. These days, people will often say, actually, oh, I've got a friend, or I've been before to see one, or I know other people who've been to see it. So it's quite interesting, the transition, the ownership that people are taking now for saying, this isn't right, it's not working, I need to get this.
That's very good news. Yes, that's very good. And as you mentioned, 20 years that you've been doing this, can I ask about your journey to get to be a stress and anxiety counsellor? Because it's not something that's sort of readily available. I know you teach it, but how did you get started in it?
Well, I had a long, successful, very happy career with British Gas. I was headhunted to set up a new company for them. So I was very involved in my corporate career and enjoyed it, was thriving with it. And then one day, my husband, who was a bit older than me, he came home from work and said he wanted to train to be a hypnotherapist. And I sort of like, heck, what the heck does he, you know, I mean, what are you going to be doing on stage, entertaining people? And he was a very intelligent, charismatic man, and I trusted him implicitly. And we both ended up going and did interviews with the company, the people that were teaching it, and we ended up doing the training together. And because he was older than me, the idea was that it was going to be his career, his business, his practice. But I continued with my career with British Gas, and but when he became unwell, I sort of, to cut a long story short, took redundancy, redid all my hypnotherapy training, got a distinction in the training that I did, and subsequently took over the practice, and that was the start of it, really. So in a sense, I always say it was never my goal or something on my wish list to become. It kind of happened by chance, but now I know that it was very much, if you believe in these things, I almost feel that I was guided or drawn to this without really, you know, almost, I always laugh and say I was kicking and screaming, you know, I got dragged into this by chance, because it was that way, really.
Yes, well, but meant to be by the, well, very much by the results.
Yeah, look, I mean, last year, one of my nephews said to me, Auntie Susan, at your age, people are usually thinking of retiring, but you're getting up other careers and you're taking on other avenues. And I go, you know what, Michael, you're absolutely right. And it's true. When you do, there's a saying, isn't there? If you love what you do, you never work a day in your life. And I very much feel like that. I love everything I do. Everything's a challenge. I'm putting myself out there a lot, but it's fabulous. It's fun. I'm very fortunate.
Well, you are a real example to the midlife women community who I'm trying to help, because, you know, as you said, you never were. Once you find your mission, your passion, then life, everything unrolls beautifully. But so many people are going around in circles or stuck in this when they and so you are an inspiration.
I have a lot of respect for stuck as well. You know, I see a lot of coaches out there saying, you're awesome, you're wonderful, do everything you like in life. If it doesn't turn you on, don't do it. And I think, okay, I hear that, and they have a point. But I also do think that we have to respect where people's journey is for them. You know, that I've got clients sometimes who are perhaps juggling two or three jobs, or they're a single parent, or they have, you know, a long-term debt that they're desperately trying to shovel away from them. And sometimes I'm fortunate, I've loved everything I've done. I think if I'm going to say I'm going to do it, I commit to it, whatever that might be, even the drudgery, I commit to and I enjoy. And I do think perspective is a huge part of our attitude, our approach to life. But I also know that stuck can sometimes be a solution, a remedy, a way of getting by for a period of time. And sometimes we have to help people through that stage too.
Yes, yes. Well, as you know, one of the things I mentioned in the promotion for this interview was the fact that a lot of people suffer with uncomfortable memories, which they may or may not know about. And I know this is an area where you are able to help people. And as you mentioned earlier on, 20 years ago, the difference between hypnotherapy and hypnosis was not generally known. Would you like to talk a bit about what you do for people, well, I don't know how this comes up, but perhaps you'd like to talk about the work you do with people of freeing them from past memories.
Okay. Well, we are the sum total of everything that's happened in our lives. And so I will often say to clients when I'm introducing hypnotherapy, even if people have had it before, I'll always introduce it so that we know we're on the same level playing field. And I say that about 1/7 of our mind is our conscious mind. Now, that's a logical, rational, I'm not happy, I need to sort this out, you know, I know I should feel better, or I know I should feel blessed, or I'm in a very fortunate position. So the logical, rational stuff is the stuff that often will drive people to go and seek help, because they're not happy, they're feeling jaded, they're losing motivation, perhaps relationships, areas around their lives are suffering and struggling. That's the 1/7 of your mind. The thing that is important to people like me who are hypnotherapists is that 6/7 of our mind is the unconscious mind. Now, in there is the sum total of every single thing that's ever happened in your life. Thoughts, feelings, smells, tastes, emotions, all those things that were associated with any experience that you've had is stored in your unconscious mind. You never forget a thing. And you know that because just looking at an old photograph album or hearing a tune on the radio or perhaps this particular smell can be quite significant and trigger those thoughts, those feelings where we go, oh, wow, that takes me back. I remember that time we were on that beach at Blackpool, and oh, yes, that kiddie with the dog, and oh, yes, we went for an ice cream. Something as simple as that can take us back to a earlier memory, a feeling, or whatever that might be. Now, just like that can happen with the goodies, it can also happen with the baddies. So when somebody uses a tone of voice, or they look at us in a certain way, or even things that, like I call the life rules. Life rules are the things that are not legislation, but are things that we've picked up along the way. Like a life rule might be people like us. People like us don't deserve to be affluent or successful or happy or whatever that might be. Finish the sentence. Or nice girls don't enjoy sex, or nothing good ever comes without hard work, or whatever it might be. And there can be a whole myriad of these things that we learn. We almost feel that they're part of our DNA, but they're not. They're required along the way as a consequence. People that we've come into contact with, whether school teachers, parents, relatives, neighbors, parents of kiddies that we were friends with, things we've witnessed along the way, we accumulate all this stuff. And things that might have been useful to get us through situations as a kiddie, like running away or pretending to be ill or hiding under the desk, metaphorically speaking, those things, we may not somehow be able to unlearn those ourselves. We might know that we shouldn't be doing this, we shouldn't be repeating this pattern, we shouldn't be feeling this, we shouldn't get uptight every time somebody says that or looks at us, or, you know, the boss wants, I mean, a typical one is the boss wants to speak to you in his office, and many people will almost get that, reflections of the headmaster wants to see you, even though the boss might be saying, well done, you did a great job. But I've had clients who spent 3 days hardly sleeping because their boss wanted to speak to them about something and could only fit them in 2 or 3 days' time. God. And yet when they get there, they get commended for something well done, or asked a question, or can you do a report for me or something. And so we accumulate these memories, experiences, life rules, things that are said and done to us. And sometimes if we're unable to sort that out, what happens over time is the first time something happens, it gets laid down as a what I call a defining moment. But then we can overlay that with subsequent similar experiences where we go, oh, there you go. I mean, I remember a client said to me, nothing good ever happens to me, ever. Built this over years and years and years with this anticipation. And I said, you know what? And I'd worked with her a few times. I went, you know what? I don't believe you. And she looked at me horrified. How disrespectful was Susan Lee? But I actually said, you mean to tell me nobody's ever said, wow, you look amazing, or here's a cup of coffee, or they've let you out in traffic in your car when you were driving? And she says, of course they have. But we can become so focused, our perspective can become so engrossed, involved, in what's actually, you know, looking for the negatives, the red car syndrome, where we just notice red cars everywhere we go or whatever it might be. But we can become so hung up on that that we miss out. We don't see, we don't register the good stuff that happens. And my role is about helping people to learn to drain off that jug of dripping water that's coming through from the ceiling, drain it off so we can start new and have a better perspective on life as a consequence.
That's a very good analogy.
Yeah, I mean, I say, you know, if you've got a drip coming through the ceiling, you might put a jug there for a time, and at first you'll notice it, it's noisy as the water comes plop, plop, plop down, you notice it and it irritates you maybe. And you may want to think, oh, I need to do something about that drip, but gradually you become immune to it, inured to it, you don't even pay attention. And then that'll carry for a period of time where we're hardly noticing it. And then it will spill, one drop will send the whole thing flooding over. And if we don't do anything about that, it will drip down into the carpet, make it smelly and rotten, might go through to the floorboards. Eventually the whole floor could come caving down. So we need to sort of intercept at various points and say, okay, something here is stopping, blocking, infecting me, causing me hardship or pain. What do I need to do about that? That's yes. Where we can come in to help.
So can I ask you, from what you were saying, the was it 1/6 of the of our memory, like an iceberg, is underwater and we don't see it. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct, yes, yeah.
So when you're talking to a client, particularly in the early days, do you spot before they do what is, say, the dripping water or something that is really having an effect on them? They talk about their effects, but do you spot the potential cause? And if so, how do you bring them round to see that?
Well, I mean, let me think of a nice generalized example. I mean, I often find, if we talk about something like smoking or weight or relationship patterns or something, I mean, I listen. My job is about hearing what people are saying. The messages, the words they use are often a dead giveaway. But what I will do intermittently throughout the interview, and the first session is all, I always allow a couple of hours for the first session where we spend 1 hour approximately talking, I'm asking questions. But one of the things that I do is I'm listening, making notes, but I'm also rounding up every now and again. And I'll say, well, it seems to me we're talking about such a thing. She was talking about food, she's come to lose weight. And I said to her, we're not actually talking about dieting, are we? We're not talking about food. Oh, and she went, because she'd been talking so much about her family and her background and, you know, various hurts along the way and how she felt disrespected. And I said, you know, it sounds to me we're talking about your swallowing all that. I bet, do you actually taste your food? And she went, no. And then before I asked the question that she didn't, because she was literally just swallowing food to avoid her having to confront the painful emotions that she was going through, the way she was being treated, the situation she was in. And so I was able to say to her, and often I find the questions that I ask, people are nodding because they're going, wow, you know, you've really heard me, you've understood what I'm saying, you've really got a handle on it. The number of times people say to me, oh God, wow, you've literally just encapsulated the previous 20, 30 minutes that I've been speaking into a sentence or two. Because when you're listening properly and respectfully and paying attention to your client, that relationship is the cornerstone of doing some effective healing. And people feel confident when you're able to listen and sum up what they've said and bring it all together, which is what I aim to do when I'm working with a client, particularly, as you say, in the early days where you're establishing the foundations on what you're going to do your building blocks, your healing work with.
Brilliant. Well, that's really very good. So having sort of brought the issue out, just telling somebody, not so much telling them, even getting them to start to recognize it, does that deal with these deeper memories, or do you have to do more?
I actually often will, but that's the first part of the session is a talking bit where we almost stir the pot and get people thinking about what's going on with them and sort of almost acknowledging what it is that they need to deal with, perhaps, you know, and it's done in a conversational way. I like to be very respectful. I call myself non-invasive, which means, you know, I'll often say, look, we're not here to find somebody to blame. we're not on a witch hunt to find who's responsible for this. I mean, I actually specialize in abuse. And even in that scenario, I will still say, you know, how do we move this forward? You know, it's not about spending your whole life blaming somebody. Yes, certain things maybe should not have happened, and indeed were awful to have happened. However, where we are now is 10, 20, 30 years on from when that original thing occurred. What needs to happen now to help you to liberate yourself from that and to start living a life that's healthy and vibrant and positive for you? So using, getting all that, the basis of what we're doing, and then using that as a way of moving forward, so we can say, okay, let's now do some hypnotherapy work, which is linking in with the trance state that people are already very familiar with, to effect some healing. And I will introduce that by saying, we all spend, if you're a human being, and people laugh, you know, are you a human being? Yes, I am. So in which case then you spend 80% of your time in a trance state. So if you've ever driven anywhere that you go to on a regular basis, if you've ever wandered around a supermarket and then thought, oh, bread, yes, I want bread, and then you're back into a trance until you get to milk or pickles or whatever the heck it is. We spend a lot of our, or in a boring meeting where somebody's droning on and we're not really listening properly, and then they say our name and we're instantly awake and alert, but until that point we'd perhaps been a bit drifty, floaty. Well, that state is a comfortable enough state that people are already familiar with.
Yes.
To take them into a sort of trance state, and then use proper language, effective language, hypno language, to actually help people touch base with what it is that caused the problem, and then in a non-invasive way, sort of heal it, move it forward. So people don't need to speak. They don't need to, you know, be confronting it or necessarily going through a whole load of traumatic memories. It's not about that. It's about just somehow positively allowing that to be recognized, accessed, and then told, thank you for being around all this time, but actually your job is done now. You can go and leave me to move on into the age that I am today, to actually move forward and live a life that's viable, positive, and much healthier in many ways.
Hello, Susan. Great. And that's very helpful, I think, to make it okay with people. And
I had the picture of me on at the beginning, just so
the fact that we are in a dance quite
you
a
can see
time,
me, because it takes helpful. I have to unmute you because the rest of the audience is muted.
So we're coming to the end now, but you know, obviously, you've given us so much wisdom in your in this.
I beg your pardon.
Time. It's gone very quickly.
You're clear, but not very loud. Now I don't know where I can adjust the volume.
Of value. I mean, like the thing about the life rules. That was something I've not heard expressed like that before. But it's extremely good.
Right. Well, I've just maximised the volume on my computer.
We automatically feel our
which hopefully, because that's what gets recorded.
Can
you hear me clearly?
You know, things that we automatically take for granted. Doesn't everybody think that way? Doesn't everybody?
Are you very far away from your computer?
We all know we have to think or feel or believe certain things and take them as a given. And in truth, it's not the case at all. So sometimes just looking at things and going, oh gosh, yes,
right,
I can feel different.
I mean, on my computer, I don't actually know where the microphone is.
Sayings, and one is, it's not what happens to us.
It's there somewhere, like, so it's obviously picking me up.
And so many of them.
I wonder if our sounds to be the same level, because.
And then kick ourselves afterwards, or.
I can always boost the volume from the recording,
oh, gosh,
but if I'm a lot louder than you, then it's going to be.
How do we respond to that?
Let me go and get my headphones and see whether that brings us back.
I can either go berserk and kick it and scream and shout and rant and rave and complain about my husband or my mechanic or whatever it might be. Or I can go, the car's broken down. What do I do about it? And which is a more constructive way? And sometimes we can't intercept those emotions, that emotional response. We might be very stressed. We might be overwrought. We might be on a deadline and we haven't got the time to waste or the money to spend to fix it or whatever it might be. But at the end of the day, that's a situation. And so it's about sort of becoming, owning ourselves more, becoming adult, if you like, but becoming more more positive, more in control, more clear about what we need to do and how to move forward. And that is a huge part of reducing the stress in our lives by being more in the moment. I mean, the word after moment is being mindful, but being more in the moment and saying, okay, this is where I am. What do I do about it? And that calmer approach gives us better insight, gives us more tools to think about and reflect on and have a more constructive way. You know, you get bad service in a restaurant, you can kick and scream and rant and rave, or you can say, excuse me, could I have a word with the, you know, the manager or whoever, you know, we were very disappointed.
Right, I'm just going to plug these in and see whether...
treated better. You might get treated quicker if you shout and scream, but used to say they've not spit in your soup when they bring it back.
Yeah, so many things.
You know, you can work a pace yourself.
I know you work with professionals.
So you pace yourself,
everything organized,
and do things in a better way, because it's much more healthy for you and for the people in your life.
Oh, right. Hey. Well, thank you. That's very good advice to end on. I just want to make sure that people know.
Right, I'm very impressed. I'm going to mention that
with you.
Now, can you hear me any better or any differently?
You know, the more recent book I talked about.
Well, curiously enough, I've got two plugs on the headphones and only one holds them in. Is that any different?
I want to hear more.
You're very clear. You're fine. Yeah, the problem's me, isn't it?
So the first.
Well, yes, but I don't want to put too much stress on it. If there's anything you can do to
your website, let's go next, lifestyle therapy.
Did you say you have got some
your email
headphones with a microphone?
Lifestyle therapy.
No, all right. Well, we will Facebook, do fine, I'm sure. They want to hear you, not me.
I think it is. It's the same. I've changed my picture
I just want to see if I can get this is something else. I'm not knowing it's such a hassle.
My website, there's loads of articles.
But today, because it's long time, I've got a very small audience.
There's loads of
possibly my sister.
I've got several videos and recordings
and
some stuff I've done on the radio.
So I'm just going to try
videos there that I'm
trying to do on
the BBC and various things that I've done.
What the audience can see.
All sorts of stuff. Tips, hints, all different things, and added
because
to
my
all the time. So there's a lot
of
stuff that people can read and access and think about, and covering all a whole myriad of things. So yes, it's all there, available.
That's wonderful. But in case people haven't got anything, I will put on the podcast site that information. But in case someone's hearing this and hasn't done any words, the important thing to remember is that Susan Lee is spelled L-E-I-G-H, and just put that in and you're sure to encounter Susan, and from then on all on to the other sources of Susan's wisdom. So Susan, thank you so much for this evening, and it's been really wonderful to talk to you and get up to date, because we've known each other for some years, haven't we?
We have, Dean, yes.
Right. So thank you again, and thank you to our audience, and we look forward to speaking to you again. So it's good night from me.
And good night from me.
Thank you. Good night. Bye.